Imagine you're standing in a really crowded Apple store. Your MacBook is just completely dead. Your entire digital life is basically trapped inside it.
Oh, that is just the absolute worst feeling. Panic mode.
Right. You're sweating, and the Genius Bar technician is, like, basically ignoring you. Instead of making eye contact and calming you down, they're completely focused on awkwardly pecking away at an iPad to type up your diagnostic notes.
Yeah, it's the ultimate bottleneck in customer service. I mean, you go in there seeking some kind of reassurance and you end up feeling like you're just another data entry chore for them.
Exactly. And that exact scenario is what we're digging into today. Because as we comb through our stack of sources from the July 20, 2026 edition of Taken Morning, this really brilliant through line emerges for you to think about.
We are looking at a literal masterclass in how the biggest giants in tech, science, and even entertainment are actively trying to manage friction.
Yes. Friction. Whether that means eliminating the physical friction in a retail store, fixing the dangerous friction of divided attention in your car, or aggressively controlling the friction of high-stakes information. Okay, let's unpack this, starting right back at that crowded Apple store.
So Apple is currently beta testing this system called Live Notes to solve that exact Genius Bar nightmare you just described. They're deploying this AI-driven system designed to automatically record, transcribe, and summarize your hold repair conversation in real time.
Which, I mean, it sounds incredibly futuristic, but also a little terrifying. Like, you sit down and an AI is just openly eavesdropping on you.
It sounds bad when you put it like that, but the technical mechanics behind it are what make it viable. Apple isn't just turning on a hot mic and beaming your voice to the cloud. They are using on-device small language models, or SLMs, paired with advanced natural language processing.
Okay, so keeping the data local.
Exactly. What that means for you sitting at the table is that the iPad's internal neural engine is doing all the heavy lifting locally. It creates this acoustic fingerprint of your specific conversation bubble.
Oh, wow. So it actively filters out the background chaos of, you know, 50 other people buying iPhones right next to you.
Right. It silently listens to your specific hardware issue, transcribes it, and instantly generates a structured, bulleted summary for the technician on the screen.
So the technician can actually look you in the eye, troubleshoot your logic board, and just let the AI handle all the administrative paperwork.
And that completely removes the friction of divided attention.
I totally see the efficiency there.
Yeah.
But I have to push back a little on the privacy angle here. Apple has come out swinging on this, right? Emphasizing that participation requires explicit verbal consent from both you and the employee.
Yep, and they've stressed that the raw audio never leaves the device.
Right. Furthermore, they claim store managers are explicitly denied access to these transcripts to prevent workplace surveillance. But if everything is so locked down, why are the retail labor unions in these test stores demanding, like, binding legal guarantees against AI performance evaluations?
It's a great question.
Like, why the panic if the managers can't even see the data?
What's fascinating here is that this system is pulling double duty. This isn't just about speeding up a Genius Bar appointment. I mean, this is a massive real-world stress test for the broader Apple intelligence ecosystem.
Oh, I see. Because of the environment.
Exactly. If you want to train an AI model to really understand human intent, you put it in the loudest, most complex, stress-filled environment possible.
The ultimate gauntlet. I mean, if the AI can parse a software error code over the sound of a crying toddler and a store alarm going off, it can work pretty much anywhere.
Precisely. And that is why the unions are raising red flags. Introducing AI into physical workspaces, it creates unprecedented human and legal friction.
Because even if it's private now, they know it's coming.
Right. The workers know that while the local processing keeps things private today, the long-term reality of this technology is inevitably about optimization. It's a very short conceptual leap from an AI summarizing a battery repair to an AI grading a technician on, you know, their tone of voice, their empathy, or their upselling techniques.
Wow. So Apple is solving the friction of divided attention for the customer, but they're inadvertently replacing it with a massive wave of workplace anxiety for the employee.
That's the trade-off.
Well, while Apple is utilizing cutting-edge AI to solve the friction of divided attention inside a retail store, Google has just rolled out a much simpler software fix to solve that exact same friction point, but in a much more dangerous environment when you're behind the wheel of a car.
Oh, the new Android Auto speedometer update.
Yes. And reading this dispatch, I was just in a state of sheer disbelief. I mean, it's July 2026, and Google is finally doing a server-side rollout of a live, real-time GPS speedometer for Android Auto users right on the main Google Maps screen.
It took a while.
A while. So what does this all mean? Apple CarPlay has had this for ages. Even Google's own Waze app has had this for years. Why did Google force drivers to dangerously dart their eyes back and forth between the navigation map and their physical dashboard for so long?
Well, the delay really comes down to the friction between safety psychology and just super rigid software design. For years, Google's UI experts operated under a really strict philosophy. In a vehicle, interface clutter equals visual distraction.
And visual distraction equals fatal accident.
Exactly. They refused to add more elements to the map screen because their older software framework didn't allow for clean integration. It was just too bulky.
It was too rigid, like a framed painting where you can't just slap a new clock on the canvas without covering up the actual artwork.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. It really needed a fundamental architectural shift, which finally arrived with the 2024 CoolWalk redesign. That update turned the whole interface into a flexible, dynamic grid of tiles.
Oh, right, the tiles.
Yeah, and that flexibility laid the necessary groundwork to finally introduce the speedometer without obstructing your navigation path.
And the execution is actually brilliant now that it's finally here, because it uses your smartphone's highly accurate GPS data, which honestly is often more precise than your car's physical speedometer anyway.
Very true.
But the real genius is in the visual placement. They put the digital speedometer directly next to the posted speed limit icon. And if you're speeding, the numbers dynamically change color to yellow or red.
And the safety value of that color coding cannot be overstated. When you are driving at 70 miles per hour, you just do not have the luxury of reading tiny numbers.
No, you need it instantly.
Right. So the color-coded feedback leverages your peripheral vision perfectly. By consolidating your route, the legal speed limit, and your current speed into a single localized focal point that just changes color, Google drastically reduces the cognitive load.
You've absorbed every critical piece of information with a single split-second glance. So Google's strict, uncompromising design principles finally removed a massive friction point for drivers. But if you look at their hardware division, a premium design strategy created so much consumer friction that they are now quite literally giving away the solution.
Ah, you're talking about the massive Pixel Watch band liquidation.
A fire sale of epic proportions. I mean, Pixel smartwatches have this fiercely loyal fan base that just loves that circular domed glass aesthetic. But Google tried to force this premium luxury ecosystem by charging $50 to $80 for their official proprietary watch bands.
Which created immediate financial friction for the average user. $50 for a band is a tough sell.
Exactly. So what did you do if you owned one? You likely went to Amazon and got a cheap third-party knockoff. But the physical friction here was literal. These knockoffs had poorly machined locking lugs.
Oh, the shattering glass issue.
Yes. You had these beautiful, expensive smartwatches suddenly detaching from people's wrists and shattering on the concrete. Just an absolute disaster for the brand. But now, seemingly out of nowhere, Google has slashed prices on their official bands by up to 80%. The rugged active bands plummeted from $50 down to $10.
Yeah, on the surface, it looks like a generous move to lure buyers back to the safety of the official ecosystem. But the underlying mechanics of the tech industry suggest something much more strategic.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Because this feels exactly like a video game store, heavily discounting all of its PlayStation 4 games right before the PlayStation 5 drops.
Oh, that's a great comparison.
Right. They aren't just being nice. They're clearing the shelves because something entirely new is coming.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the hardware analysts agree completely with that theory. A leaked Google patent points directly to a completely redesigned proprietary magnetic attachment system for the next generation of the Pixel Watch coming this autumn.
Which means they're changing the physical connection point entirely, like starting from scratch.
Yes. The goal of the new magnetic system is to eliminate the internal mechanical lugs, which frees up precious physical space inside the watch chassis for a larger battery or more sensors.
But the investment reality for you as a consumer is pretty stark here.
Very stark. If you plan on buying the new Pixel Watch this fall, do not buy these discounted bands. They will be entirely physically incompatible. They are completely obsolete.
But if you love your current first or second generation Pixel Watch and you plan to keep it for years, a $10 official band that used to cost $50 is just an unbeatable investment. Google is ruthlessly discarding its old hardware designs to overcome ecosystem friction and pave the way for the future.
And if you want to talk about engineering hardware to overcome the ultimate environmental friction, we have to look out into deep space.
Oh, I am so glad we were talking about this because the NASA Psyche probe dispatch had me completely geeking out,
mm-hmm.
NASA released a video that looks like a high-budget sci-fi film.
It really does. It's beautiful.
Right.
It's this stunning time-lapse of Mars set against the pitch-black void. And the resolution is so crisp, you can watch localized dust storms tearing across the Martian equator with the ice caps glowing at the poles. But the jaw-dropping part is the physical maneuver the probe was executing to get that footage.
It was performing a gravity assist.
The physics of this are mind-blowing to me. The probe needs to reach the main asteroid belt, but rockets can only carry so much fuel, right? So it approaches Mars at a highly calculated angle and essentially steals a fraction of the planet's orbital momentum to slingshot itself forward.
Accelerating to 73,000 miles per hour without burning a drop of fuel?
It's just wild.
The easiest way to visualize a gravity assist is to imagine standing on a platform and throwing a tennis ball at the front of a speeding freight train.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
When the ball bounces off the front of the train, it comes back at you much faster than you threw it because it absorbed a tiny fraction of the train's forward momentum. The Psyche probe basically used Mars as the freight train.
That makes so much sense.
But this raises an important question. Why turn the cameras on during this incredibly dangerous high-speed maneuver?
Because at 73,000 miles per hour, they weren't just making a screensaver for public relations.
Far from it. The engineering team at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory needed a high-stakes calibration test for the probe's multispectral imager.
A calibration test while flying by a planet?
Yeah. They used the intense reflection of sunlight off the Martian surface, a metric known in astrophysics as albedo, which is similar to the blinding glare you get off fresh snow, to verify that the optical sensors could handle extreme lighting conditions.
Oh, I see.
They really needed to test for thermal noise and sensor artifacts while they were still relatively close to home.
Because when they finally reach their target, there is absolutely zero margin for error.
Exactly. The mission takes years, covering 2.2 billion miles to arrive at an asteroid named 16 Psyche in 2029.
And 16 Psyche isn't just some random rock floating out there.
No, it is a scientific gold mine. Or, well, more accurately, an iron mine. Most asteroids are made of rock or ice. But 16 Psyche is believed to be composed almost entirely of pure iron and nickel. Astrophysicists suspect that it is a planetesimal.
Planetesimal meaning like a baby planet that never fully matured.
Exactly that. A primordial building block of the early solar system. It likely had its rocky outer crust violently smashed away by collisions billions of years ago.
Leaving only the dense metallic core exposed to the vacuum of space.
Right. We obviously cannot drill thousands of miles down into the molten core of our own Earth. But by flying a probe to 16 Psyche, scientists can directly study an exposed planetary core.
That is incredible.
The data gathered there could finally unlock the mechanics of how the Earth core generates the magnetic field that shields our atmosphere and makes all life on this planet possible.
It is staggering to think about the meticulous planning and the absolute unwavering control NASA has to maintain over that multi-billion dollar hardware to survive the friction of the cosmos.
It requires total mastery over physics and information.
Well, speaking of total mastery over information, that brings us back down to Earth, straight into the gaming industry.
Mm.
Because video game companies are fighting just as hard to maintain absolute control.
Though with very different stakes.
Right. Instead of battling the friction of space, they are battling the friction of information leaks, rumors, and consumer expectations. And we are seeing two gaming titans take wildly different approaches to secrecy.
Microsoft's Xbox division and Nintendo.
Let's start with the agonizing ambiguity over at Xbox. Every gamer wants to know if the next highly anticipated Fallout RPG will be an exclusive to the Xbox console and PC, or if it will be released on the rival PlayStation 5.
And Microsoft executives are speaking in riddles, just masterfully evading any definitive answer.
I have to push back hard on Microsoft's strategy here. Look, Microsoft spent $7.5 billion to acquire Bethesda Softworks. $7.5 billion. To me, that is like a football team buying a star quarterback for a record-breaking sum and then letting the rival team use him in the playoffs.
It does seem counterintuitive.
The whole point of buying those studios was to lock down system-selling exclusive games that force people to buy Xbox hardware. Why would you ever give a massive game like Fallout to PlayStation?
Because the math of modern game development sort of overrides console loyalty at this point. Microsoft's CEO, Satya Nadella, demands a strict ROI return on investment.
Right, the bottom line.
Developing a next-generation, massive, open-world RPG costs hundreds of millions of dollars and takes years. If you restrict Fallout solely to the Xbox install base, you are severely limiting your revenue potential. But if you put the game on the PlayStation 5, you suddenly have access to an established market of 80 million additional players.
This is a huge audience.
Exactly. That guarantees a massive influx of software sales, which recoups the development costs faster and keeps the corporate shareholders very happy.
But the friction that causes with the actual gamers is devastating. I mean, if you admit that Fallout is going to PlayStation, you immediately devalue the Xbox Series X hardware. You alienate the millions of loyal fans who bought an Xbox specifically because you promised them exclusive Bethesda games.
The executives are absolutely trapped in a vice. Announce it's an exclusive, and shareholders demand to know why you are leaving all that PlayStation money on the table. Announce it's going to PlayStation, and your core fan base revolts.
So what do they do?
They embrace the friction of ambiguity. They offer these diplomatic non-answers to gaming outlets to delay the psychological fallout for as long as possible.
Now, contrast that frustrating uncertainty with the absolute iron grip of Nintendo. They proved they are the undisputed masters of corporate secrecy with how they handled the reveal of The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom. The sheer paranoia they utilize to keep that title secret before E3 is almost hard to believe.
The corporate culture of secrecy at Nintendo's Kyoto headquarters is practically legendary at this point.
According to the verified internal documents leaked to Kotaku, they treated the game's title like classified military intelligence. They constructed completely offline, air-gapped intranets so nothing could be intercepted over Wi-Fi. Yeah, and they mandatorily changed the project's internal generic code name every single week to confuse data miners. They physically glued and blocked the USB ports on the developers' workstations so no one could plug in a thumb drive and walk out with assets.
Glued the ports.
This is a game where thousands of people across various global studios were contributing to QA testing, localized translation, and marketing.
And despite that massive global workforce, the physical and digital friction Nintendo imposed was so effective that fewer than 10 people across the entire corporation actually knew the definitive title and the contents of that final reveal trailer.
That is insane. 10 people.
10 people. The game director, the lead producer, the CEO, and a handful of network engineers, entire localization teams, and senior executives in America were kept completely in the dark until the video played live.
And the payoff for that intense friction was spectacular. When the logo finally faded onto the screen with the words Tears of the Kingdom, a wave of pure, unadulterated shock swept across the gaming internet.
It was a massive moment.
In an era where literally everything leaks months in advance, Nintendo managed to manufacture a moment of pure magic and genuine surprise that money simply cannot buy.
It perfectly illustrates that whether you are withholding information to delay a backlash, like Microsoft, or restricting information to protect a surprise, like Nintendo, controlling the flow of data is just as critical as controlling the flow of revenue.
It really is. Well, we have covered an incredible amount of ground today for you. We've seen how these massive players attempt to manage the friction in our daily lives.
From Apple leveraging small language models to filter out the noise of a crowded genius bar.
And Google utilizing the psychology of peripheral vision to stop you from staring at your dashboard. To liquidating obsolete watch bands for $10. Plus, NASA stealing orbital momentum from Mars to study a planetary core, and Nintendo physically blocking USB ports to protect a multi-billion-dollar secret.
It is a phenomenal cross-section of how human behavior shapes technological design. And before we wrap up, I want to leave you with one final thought, circling back to our very first topic at the Apple Store.
Oh, lay it on us.
So we noted that Apple plans to use their Live Notes database, aggregating millions of transcribed hardware complaints, to eventually redesign and eliminate the physical flaws in future iPhones and MacBooks, right?
Right, optimization.
But consider this. If artificial intelligence eventually designs out every single physical flaw based on the statistical aggregation of our complaints, will we eventually reach a point where our consumer hardware becomes so perfectly structurally uniform that it loses all the unique, quirky design choices that made us fall in love with gadgets in the first place? It is definitely something to chew on.
That is a wildly compelling thought to end on. A perfectly frictionless world might just turn out to be an incredibly boring one. Thank you so much for joining us as we unpack the stack of sources today. Keep asking questions, keep looking for those hidden details, and we will catch you on the next deep dive.